Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Asia podcast. I'm Doug Krisner. You can join Brian Curtis and myself for the stories making news and moving markets in the APAC region. You can subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcast and always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business app.
After the bell, Tesla reported worse-than-expected profit and revenue for a third consecutive quarter. The company continues to buckle under the weight of slower demand for electric vehicles. However, Tesla said it is accelerating the launch of more affordable models. It plans to start production on the cheaper cars before the second half of 2025. That could ease deterioration in profit margins and sales. The market sort of seized on that as a positive, but Gerber Kawasaki's Ross Gerber said he's not sure Tesla can deliver on that new claim.
I just don't believe that statement. I don't see how they're going to pull forward production of this vehicle to be ready in a year after they just laid off 15,000 people and a lot of factories and a lot of high quality individuals just lost their jobs. So I'm kind of curious to, you know, we can say things, but we know that when Elon says something, it often takes 4 years after the initial comment.
That's Ross Gerber, the co-founder of Gerber Kawasaki, and he has formerly been a massive bull on Tesla. And as I said, the market really seized on this because Tesla shares rose 13% in late trading. Well, joining us now for some discussion on this is Steve Mann, Bloomberg Intelligence Global Autos and Industrials Research Manager, taking a closer look. So as you mentioned, the market, Steve, really seized on the idea of a cheaper car. So a lot of companies have thought about and have tried to make cheap EVs. Can it really be done? I think we have to say that with Tesla, this is a CEO who landed spent rockets on a barge. Should we believe him?
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me on. I think this is a very important earnings release for Tesla. Stock's been down 40% since the beginning of the year. They really need to come out and really soothe the concerns of like basically two groups of investors. One, those who just believe Tesla is an automotive company, not a tech company. And there are the other majority that believes this is a tech AI company and not so much of an auto company. So coming out and, you know, announcing that, you know, they're going to launch a more affordable EV, not in the second half of 2025. They actually moved it up to the first half of 2025. That really resonated with, I think, the automotive group of investors. And then I think more importantly, as you know, this stock's valuation is quite high on the back of, their AI endeavor. And I think launching a more affordable EV is critical to get scale more vehicles on the roads to actually help them scale up AI training. So, I mean, it was a really good call for Tesla, really. I mean, the numbers were bad, but I think the outlook is positive.
Maybe. I'm going to be a little skeptical, and I'm wondering, Steve, and you can weigh in on this, whether the move, the 11% move that we had in late trading, any amount of that move that may be attributable to a kind of short covering here, because we know, as you said earlier, this stock year to date is down by more than 40%, and the street was prepared for kind of pretty bad report here for the quarter, and I'm wondering whether maybe a little bit of short covering was involved in late trading.
It seems like it, but you know, I think in your last segment, one of your guests said, you know, have some reservation in terms of how they're going to execute in launching this new vehicle. That is a risk. It's always been Tesla's risk in execution. But I think they're still going ahead with some of the new production facilities that they're looking to erect in Mexico. But I think, you know, with slowing sales in the Model 3 and Model Y, they're taking advantage of the additional capacity to pull that launch of the affordable EV ahead. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, it's not new to them. I think if you look at the Model 3, they went through production hell. They also went through production hell for the Model X years ago. They're doing the same thing with Cybertruck. And by the way, Cybertruck, it's actually ramping up faster than the market has anticipated. And Cybertruck has been a huge drag on earnings. So anyway,
and Steve. Yeah, I mean, part of the problem is execution, as you highlight there, and it's management. We had two key executives leave the company. Now today, Martin Viecha, who's the head of investor relations, announced his resignation on the call. Should we be concerned about management there?
Yeah, I think we shouldn't. I don't think I'm too worried about the management change. You know, these individuals have been with the company for a long time, since the Model 3 launch, since the SNX launch, since the inception of the company. They have a very good team. Teamwork is, I mean, it's probably one of the best in the auto industry. So, you know, they still have very strong individuals that they've hired over the past, you know, 5 years. They've been in a hiring spree in those past 5 years. I think it wouldn't hurt to bring some new blood into the game, mm-hmm. and kind of look in the future and you know maybe take the company in a little bit direction in growing the AI and the rest of the auto business.
He's still, and when I say he, Elon Musk is still committed to this idea of robo taxis. Do you think this is a smart bet, given everything that this company is dealing with in terms of headwinds right now?
Well, I still think robotaxi is still many years away. I think in the call, one of the things that was discussed was, policy regulations around robotaxi and autonomous driving. I think there's still a lot of work with the regulators that needs to be done to get that going. But look, it's even the R&D, the development work that's going on today. You know, I don't think they're going to get to robotaxi anytime soon. You know, in our model, we actually don't think they'll launch until as early as, you know, 2027, and probably won't able to gain, you know, revenue and profits well into the next decade. So it's gonna take some time. But I think the launching of the affordable EV really resonated with the investors, and that's why you see the stock react to it.
Our own reporting, as we heard from Ed Ludlow, is that they have made some moves to be able to produce these more affordable models early. But one thing that wasn't immediately clear was whether or not these models, whether this refers to the Model 2 that has been talked about in the past. Can you clarify that? Is that what they're talking about?
It's actually unclear. It could take a couple of forms. It could be a new platform, which is the Model 2 that, you know, the market has been talking about. But look, they've done a really good job in vertically integrating their manufacturing that have allowed them to cut costs and, you know, allowed them to be the, you know, one or two profitable EV maker in the world. Nobody's generating profits other than, you know, Tesla and probably one other Chinese company, BYD. So they've done a lot in vertical integrating manufacturing that allows them to cut costs. So the other possibility is really adding an upgrade, another variant to the existing Model 3 and Model Y, and that allows them to actually sell that variant at a cheaper price. And by the way, this is critical. This cheaper model is critical because it allows Tesla to actually expand geographic reach.
Very quickly, Steve, before we let you go, you mentioned China there and BYD. Give me your sense of the challenges that lie ahead for Tesla in China.
It's really tough over there. It's a very, very hyper-competitive market. But I think what's going positive, that's going well for Tesla as well as the Chinese EV maker is battery prices been coming down. If you look at CATL, one of the major global battery makers in the world, a Chinese battery maker in the world, you can see their margins have improved while prices have come down. So that what it means is that, you know, the efficiency, the cost of and prices of batteries are still coming down rapidly.
Yeah, that's a good thing. All right, Steve, thanks so much for joining us. Steve Mann there from Bloomberg Intelligence. Joining us now is Jasmine Enberg, Principal Advisor at eMarketer, to take a closer look at what this TikTok ban would mean. Well, there's so many different angles to this, Jasmine. I'm curious about whether or not you think that this gets lost in court for a year or two, or whether we see some other sharp-edged moves by China and perhaps a sale.
Yeah, it's a great question. TikTok has made it clear that it intends to launch a legal battle against this bill, and I expect it will be a long and drawn out and intense battle. So it's definitely not the end of TikTok here in the U.S. just yet, even though it does certainly feel like the clock is ticking, at least in terms of how TikTok operates now. Because this battle could really last for months or even for years. And, you know, if TikTok does is able to divest, even that would be, you know, another, it would have up to a year to find a buyer and to make a sale. So, you know, there's still quite a long road ahead before we see what truly happens to TikTok.
I'm wondering, given the connections that you have in the industry, whether there is an opinion that is developing here on what happens to TikTok. Is there a consensus developing, or is it simply too soon to say?
So I think there's a consensus around, you know, the bill inevitably becoming law. I think people are still, you know, somewhat torn over what happens after that. There are still a lot of ifs and questions that need to be answered. And of course, this isn't TikTok's first rodeo. I mean, this is an issue that we've all been covering and dealing with for, you know, the past couple of years with several different attempts to ban TikTok, of course. This one is very different. It's felt different from the start, and the speed at which it passed through the House and now the speed at which it's advancing through the Senate. I mean, it just it feels like a different moment. And it's something that at least we are looking at much more closely. And the advertisers and the brands that I speak to on a regular basis are also looking at very closely right now.
Yeah, you wonder who would benefit the most. I think a lot of people are saying Meta. And it's interesting with the options that China has. It could conceivably try to sell TikTok minus the algorithm and to keep it out, sell it for a diminished amount. That would very much hurt American owners, American shareholders in ByteDance itself. How do you see the possibilities of a sale and whether or not, you know, that might be the most likely outcome is that it gets sold, but no algorithm?
I mean, the algorithm question is a great one, right? It's one of the most coveted parts of TikTok. And I'm sure there are many companies here that would love to get their hands on the algorithm. And to your point, it would lessen the valuation of TikTok and perhaps expand the list of potential buyers. No matter what, though, I do think finding a buyer is going to be a difficult task for TikTok. While there are a lot of companies, again, that would like to get their hands on the company, it is one that, you know, has been heavily scrutinized over many years, not only here in the U.S., but worldwide. So this buyer would have to have a strong pocket, a strong stomach, excuse me, as well as deep pockets to be able to buy it. And companies like Meta, as well as the rest of big tech, would pretty much be out of the question because of antitrust and regulatory concerns.
Yeah, former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin has already said that he's assembling a group of investors that would make a move to buy TikTok's U.S. operation. Now, we know that Oracle is already hosting a lot of the data that TikTok has for users here in the States, which I think approaches around 170 million users. Does Oracle, I know they have about $87 billion in debt, but would that kind of emerge as a company maybe that, that could take over TikTok, or should we be thinking about other firms? I mean, you mentioned Microsoft maybe as a possibility. Meta clearly out of the question is, you know, obviously with antitrust concerns there. But are there companies like Oracle that you can see that that may have a chance at buying TikTok in the U.S.?
So one of the companies that I think would be a good fit, although I don't know how possible a deal would be, is Walmart. It did, you know, propose a deal, I believe, with Oracle in 2020. So there is some history there. And TikTok and Walmart, of course, also have a long history of working together and partnering together. The two of them also need to fend off Amazon. So it was it would be a partnership that at least in theory would make sense to me.
You know, there aren't many Chinese companies that have such a massive presence in the United States. So it might not be all that unusual if TikTok was just sold. You mentioned Walmart. That's probably one company that has deep enough pockets to consider buying TikTok. But let's talk a little bit about how much this company might sell for. I might have gotten a little bit out over my skis. I told Doug that I thought the company would be valued over $100 billion. And who could really afford that? There's only a handful of companies that could, and some of them would be blocked because of antitrust, as Doug suggested. So what sort of value does TikTok have?
Well, I've seen estimates that range anywhere between $40 billion and $150 billion, again, depending on whether the algorithm is included. That's a little bit outside of the purview that I have. We focus more on advertising, which, of course, is a core part of TikTok's business. And if you think about the size of TikTok's ad business here in the US, it is by no means a small player. We're expecting it to rake in about $10 billion in US ad revenues in 2024, assuming, of course, that it does not get banned. So it is one of the largest social media ad players out there, and by no means, again, a small business.
So $10 billion, how does that compare to what Meta rakes in terms of ad revenue?
So based on our estimates, we are predicting that Meta will rake in about $64 billion in U.S. ad revenues this year. So it is significantly larger still than TikTok. But if you think about the time that TikTok has been here in the U.S. and how rapidly it has grown, it really has been able to cross that $10 billion mark very, very quickly. But back to the previous question about whether, you know, Meta would be one of the beneficiaries, of course it would be. But thinking about, again, the size of its ad business versus the size of TikTok's ad business, any reallocated TikTok ad dollars would still be pretty much incremental to what Meta is already expected to bring in.
Okay, briefly, the one difference between the House bill and the Senate bill is this 360 days for TikTok to be divested by ByteDance. Is 360 a big deal?
Well, it's one of the reasons that it was able, or that it has more support now in the Senate. I mean, it does give, you know, TikTok more time to find a potential buyer. So I think it's one of the reasons that it was able to be pushed through into the Senate, and one of the reasons that it's you know, more likely to become law now.
Yeah, and it gets us past the election. I guess that's good. Jasmine, thanks so much for joining us. Jasmine Enberg, Principal Analyst at eMarketer.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Stosh Graham joins us, Managing Director at Graham Capital Wealth Management, to take a closer look at markets. Stosh, equities seem to regain some of the momentum that was lost in the month of April. Most of the month, we were trending to the downside and more acute last week. But these 2 days of gains have recouped about half of the 5 to 6% pullback that we saw. Citigroup says stocks are more attractive as the slide removes some of the market froth. How do you see it?
Well, Brian, in regards to market movements, say for the rest of the year, certainly this pullback has been a point where buy the dip buyers have come back. I think looking into the near term future, you're looking at largely two things: financial conditions primarily, and then secondarily, can investor sentiment still be very positive? We know it's not as positive as where it was 3 to 4 weeks ago, but certainly sentiment is still positive compared to historical norms.
What about purchasing managers' sentiment? We had the flash April composite PMI from S&P Global today. I mean, we're almost flirting with the line between expansion and contraction. In fact, if you look at the measure of orders, I mean, we dipped into contraction for the first time in 6 months. So the economy is softening. Is that enough that would cause the Fed maybe to give the equity market a little bit of relief here and begin to cut rates, let's say, twice before the end of the year is out?
That is the big question. Certainly amongst institutional money managers, I know just being on the terminal, that has been a primary point of discussion because we have seen a material amount of rate cuts come off over the last quarter and a half. Look, with where markets are right now and how they were reacting really the last 5 to 6 months in this remarkable rally, you had a dynamic of which, and you indirectly referred to it, in some situations, you had bad economic news being seen as good for markets. And then secondarily, you had good economic news being used as good news for markets. Again, when you have those dynamics, you get worried that markets could be frothy. And when you look at investor sentiment and how strong it's been over that period of time, the market's taking a breather, I think, is a natural reaction. But again, looking in the near-term future, financial conditions are still pretty loose. And right now, capital markets, again, are very favorable for companies that have strong balance sheets.
Well, I think Doug raised an interesting point, because if you think about it, interest rates are not the be-all and end-all. They're one input into the cost side of doing business. And inflation is sticky, so we're not expecting the Fed to really cut. So why would stocks go up? Well, they would go up if one of the other inputs, which is growth, is higher. And even more important than growth is how the companies manage. Are their earnings higher? So if the earnings are higher, you're probably feeling pretty good here. But then if growth is faltering, as Doug suggested with the latest ISM numbers, then it is something to be concerned about. I'm not sure that that's entrenched yet about a weakness in growth. How do you see growth?
No, absolutely. And I would say that is for us in our firm, that is the risk that the market is not fully appreciating. I think one of the difficult dynamics with using various economic data points, whether it's the variety of reports from the jobs report, we referenced PMI. A lot of these reports get revised at a later point in time. And how the data is collected, and you're seeing this with the labor market, where you have an initial jobs report, and then a month later, 3 months later, the numbers have been getting revised, and generally speaking, being revised lower. And it's not necessarily due to some nefarious mean. It's just the way, or the inefficiencies of how the numbers or how the data is collected. So while I think in the short run, again, largely because investor sentiment and financial conditions are very favorable, and historically that has been that's been your strongest variables for near-term market movements, what we're talking about, which would be, concerns about a weak economy and how that can impact financial asset markets and especially equity markets, that's your intermediate term. So I would say 6 to 12 months, that is the risk, because earnings growth, as you've been alluding to, generally have been pretty strong so far this quarter or this earnings season.
So do you seek shelter in companies that have very strong balance sheets, holding on to a lot of cash? And I'm thinking of big cap tech. Does that make sense to get a little defensive here under the umbrella of big cap tech? Or are you just frightened of valuations being too high?
Exactly. For us, in terms of information technology, which, to be fair, has seen the strong over the last 6 months, has seen the strongest earnings revisions higher of all S&P 500 subsectors. And it's largely tied to artificial intelligence and the expected spending in that respective technology. But again, valuations are very rich in the information technology space, a sector that we have been watching for some time that is generally unloved is energy. Now, the recent price movements in WTI or various other commodities has produced a nice wind over or tailwind of the last 30 days.
Yeah, we'll see if it continues. Stosh, thanks very much. Stosh Graham, Managing Director at Graham Capital Wealth Management.
This has been the Bloomberg Daybreak Asia podcast, bringing you the stories making news and moving markets in the Asia Pacific. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to get more episodes of this and other shows from Bloomberg. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen, and always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business app.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.